Welcome to the People and Projects Podcast, where you'll find interviews and insights to help you deliver projects and lead teams. You can find us on the web at peopleandprojectspodcast.com. Hi, this is Andy Kaufman, President of the Institute for Leadership Excellence Development Corporate. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the People and Projects Podcast. Have you ever heard this quote? There's an inverse relationship between your level in the company and your ability to see reality. You know, we joke about this at times when it seems like the people above us are out of touch. But why is it more difficult to see reality the higher you get in an organization? You know, sometimes it's just because people higher up are focusing on longer-term issues, right? I mean, by virtue of the scope of their responsibility, they're just not in the day-to-day. But that's not always it. You know, I was facilitating a project management workshop at a company a couple years ago, and we're discussing this very topic. And one of the participants said it this way. He goes, around here, well, it's crap down at our level, but it's fertilizer up there. It's not a problem. It's an opportunity. Well, information gets filtered as it travels up and down and around an organization. What gets through and why can make all the difference between making good, informed decisions or barreling over a cliff with what we thought was an accurate map. Well, those of us who have the privilege of leading people and delivering projects need to understand this idea of filtering. And my favorite expert for how this works is Dr. Michael Roberto. Michael's book, Know What You Don't Know, continues to be on my recommended reading for project managers and leaders. In this episode, I talk with Michael about Chapter 2 of Know What You Don't Know, Circumvent the Gatekeepers. Enjoy. I'm joined again today by Michael Roberto, who's a preeminent authority on strategic decision-making, senior management teams, and neutralizing hidden threats to organizations. Michael is the trustee professor of management at Bryant University. He served for 6 years on the faculty at Harvard Business School and has been a visiting associate professor of management at New York University Stern School of Business. We talked with Michael last year about his book, Know What You Don't Know, and we'll discuss it further today. Michael, thank you for joining us again on the People and Projects Podcast.
Andy, thanks for having me. I enjoyed talking to you last time. I look forward to another great conversation today.
I tell you, I don't think a month goes by without an opportunity for me to encourage people to read your book, Michael. It's on my recommended reading list for listeners, coaching clients, just packed with practical insights for leaders at all levels. So today I really want to drill into your chapter two, the circumventing the gatekeepers. And I love this chapter, how you open it with a story from 1970 when the Nixon administration authorized a raid on these secluded prisoners of war in his camp deep in the heart of North Vietnam. And you relate how there was some evidence, some intriguing evidence that indicated, you know, we had soldiers there in prison and things were going to get bad for them, probably die if we didn't get help fast. And after months of training, the special forces, man, they went out and executed the plan flawlessly. There weren't any serious injuries. The only problem? There weren't any prisoners of war. The North Vietnamese, they had moved the soldiers prior to the raid. And despite these heroic efforts of the special ops, it was an embarrassing example of flawed intelligence. And you use that story as a backdrop to explain the concept of filtering, that information gets filtered within an organization for a variety of reasons, and this filtering can keep us from finding the problems before they can be avoided. So, you know, even though it's true that these problems can go undetected, you know, because of filtering, there's got to be some efficiency purposes, right? So tell us a little bit about the efficiency side of filtering.
Sure. Well, let's think about the agenda of senior executives these days. In many organizations, whether they're businesses or public organizations, you know, they're packed agendas. These folks are working long weeks. They've got meeting after meeting. Remember, they're managing both the internal employees and staff members of the organization. They're also meeting with outside stakeholders all the time, representing the company publicly. They're traveling around the world, many global companies. So, you know, there are people who work for them who are sort of managing their schedule or managing what they think is appropriate to pass along to that senior executive, because they're mindful of the person's schedule. They're mindful of their time, and they certainly would never want to feel like the person was going to ask them, why are you wasting my time with that?
Right.
And so for that reason, we see filtering going on, and people are sort of hesitant to pass along information unless they really believe that senior person needs to see
it. That's right. Every once in a while, I hear people say, we need to over-communicate, but yeah, I guess you have to be careful what you ask for sometimes, too. Right?
Well, it's tough. You know, it is a delicate balancing act, I think, and it's something that, you know, we've all experienced it. It's, when you say that, you immediately think about it, and you go, yep, I understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you also mentioned
filtering can occur due to pressures to conform. So, you know, how'd that play out in the POW raid, and how do you see that in business?
Well, I think, you know, the best way to describe this is that sometimes leaders will say things that suggest they don't want to hear certain bad news or certain kinds of news, right? They will suggest essentially that they've already made up their mind, for example, on a key decision. And so in the case of the POW raid, Nixon said a few things, you know, early on where he basically said, you know, at one point one of the advisors told him that, of course, they would cancel the mission if new information arose, suggesting that the secrecy of the operation had been compromised. Yeah. And Nixon replied to that advisor, "Damn, Tom, let's not let that happen. I want this to go."
Yeah.
Well, if you say that, you've strongly signaled to people, you got to conform with what I want to do, and you're sort of making it more difficult for them to come forward with contradictory data at that point.
That's right. Are you really going to want to, you know, jump in front of that train? You know, probably not.
And we do it. We may not do it as blatantly as Nixon did in that example, but we see the executives do that a lot, where they will more subtly suggest that the sort of this train has left the station.
Yeah, and you're not telling me you're not going to hit the deadline, are you? And then all of a sudden, the risk you're going to talk about of, no, chief, yeah, we're going to hit it. So there's all kinds of examples, I'm sure, yeah. Two other reasons you mentioned are, they're somewhat opposites in some ways. There's confirmation bias, and there's advocacy. So how do those relate to filtering?
Well, the confirmation bias is a really powerful psychological phenomenon that's been studied for years and I think really explains a lot of flawed decision-making in both our personal and professional lives. And basically what the confirmation bias says is that we gather and analyze data in a biased way. We look for data and examine data that will confirm what we already believe, and we tend to avoid data that might disconfirm what we believe. And psychologists have found that we do this, and often subconsciously do this. And of course, this is a reason that we may end up filtering, is that we may end up, you know, gravitating toward and passing along and focusing on data that will confirm preconceived notions and pre-established positions. And we'll filter out discordant data. And the really scary part is we're doing that often in a very subconscious way. It's not because there's no nefarious sort of motive there. It's just part of how we go about looking at data in our lives. Now, advocacy is different, Andy. Advocacy is where we're more purposeful. It's not subconscious. That's where someone who is advocating for a particular position is presenting data in a sort of slanted way. It's presenting the data that will bolster their position in the organization, their view on a particular issue, and they're doing their best to keep data about risk or data about other alternatives or data about potential negative consequences off the table. And so that one's a little more intentional, and it's not always, you know, again, it's not always bad intentions. That's sometimes just people trying to make the most persuasive case for something they're very passionate about, but they may downplay certain risks and certain issues as a result.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm going through a senior management search with an organization right now, and I see both of these in play. For example, the confirmation bias, I find I'm drawn to a couple of candidates, and so it's much easier for me to look for the data to support that bias. Like, oh, see, I told you they're good, and ignore some of the other stuff. Yeah? And also in hiring, what are resumes? If nothing else, they're filters of advocacy, right? Are they really going to say, you know what, you know, I got out of prison 2 weeks ago? they're just going to put the best foot forward in a resume in many respects.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And unfortunately, the other thing that happens with the confirmation bias is an old study that showed that what happens as a result is when you bring a group of people together who have differing views, and they each faction gravitates toward the data that confirms what they already believe, you actually find that focusing on the facts actually leads to even more polarization, because people just further gravitate to their existing positions. Yeah. So it's a challenge.
Yeah, it is a challenge. Yeah. So, you know, those are the reasons for filtering. And you know, the issue for us as leaders is to try to circumvent them. And whether we're leading a project or a team or entire company, and a clear lesson I took from your book, Michael, is that we have to be careful about how our own behavior, whether we realize it or not, can cause those around us to hold back information. And you offered a handful of strategies that I'd really like to introduce our listeners to. And let's start with the listen with your own ears. What do you mean by that? And what are some practical examples?
Well, I really love this one. And this basically says that senior executives need to actually hear from particularly frontline employees and customers with their own ears at times. And that means for example, one of my favorite examples is when Ann Mulcahy took over at Xerox. The company was in deep trouble, and it had a great deal of customer issues, customer dissatisfaction issues. And she created a program where she called it Customer Officer of the Day, and her senior executives would be responsible one day a month, roughly, to actually take phone calls at the corporate headquarters from customers. And then they were responsible not only for hearing directly from those customers what's wrong, but addressing those issues. Mm-hmm. And another example is at CVS, where they did a wonderful job of actually enacting a program they called Customer Comment of the Day. And what they would do is they record phone calls when customers call in. You know, when you get your receipt at CVS, you can call in and respond to a survey and sort of offer your perspective on the customer service at that store. Well, they collect those, they record those, and somebody in marketing selects the most interesting or insightful call of the day. Mm-hmm. It's called the Customer Comment of the Day, and the actual audio file, electronic file, is sent to the senior team each day so they can hear that call. Not hear a report, not see statistics on customer satisfaction, but actually listen. And those kinds of programs where you're with your own ears hearing the sort of very visceral, emotional response to your customers, that's a great way to avoid the filters and make sure you're hearing what's really going on in your company.
I don't remember who even said it, Michael, but the quote was something along the lines of, there's an inverse relationship between your level in the organization and your ability to see reality.
Yeah.
And I that's what I remember thinking as I went through this listening with your own ears, of don't take the consolidated, aggregated information. Go out and listen for yourself. And you also recommend seeking different voices and connecting with young people, somewhat related there. So how do those help circumventing filters?
The seeking different voices is a great one. I really like this. And this came to me when I interviewed David Ticelli, who's the CEO of LTX Corporation. Mm-hmm. They're a semiconductor test equipment company in Massachusetts. And he said, you know, he recognized the filtering problem. And he said, you know, the way I went about trying to fix that is if I've got meetings with various units of my organization, I will sort of ask that they rotate. If it's a regular review meeting, say about key customers or about some key project we're doing, I will ask that they rotate who presents each month or each quarter from their group. So I'm not hearing only from the boss, and I'm not hearing only from the same person as they go over that. And I just thought that was a wonderful way of making sure that, you know, you get different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And as for connecting with young people, the idea here is that, you know, young people often are most in touch with sort of key trends in the marketplace, in the area of new ideas and education and all sorts of things in social media. And so young people can be really important insights about the dynamism in the marketplace. And yet they often are at such low levels in the hierarchy that, you know, they're not getting in touch.
Yeah.
So my great example here is that Jack Welch tells this story about in the mid-90s or late 90s, he was in London speaking to the president of one of the major business units at GE. And he asked sort of what was going on at the unit. And this person said, well, I've got a new mentor. And he goes, what are you talking about? You're like the CEO of the business.
Right.
You know, you're, you know, I don't know, 50s, 60s at that point in age. What do you mean you have a mentor? And he said, well, this e-commerce thing. You know, I don't know that much about it. So I found the brightest young person under 30 in the organization, and I told him to mentor me on the internet. And Welch was like, wow, that was a great idea. And he basically did this for the entire organization. He said to all the senior leaders, you're going to find a young person who understands the web and e-commerce, and you're going to make him your mentor.
Yeah.
And he really got GE to embrace a whole new technological, you know, wave that was going on early by making sure they tapped into what young people know. And it required direct communication, you know, by these senior executives with these folks. You couldn't do it through the normal hierarchy.
Yeah, yeah. I know on a personal basis, Michael, there would have been a day if someone said, you know, you need to try Facebook, Andy. I would have been, are you nuts? There's like no way I would have tried that. And yet we had some friends, godchildren, that we just couldn't scare a response out of them unless we communicated via Facebook. And to this day, it has allowed other connections, and I get far more hits on my podcast and blogs and things like that because of these social media things that I probably wouldn't have tried if we weren't brought because of the younger people. So
And I increasingly, I know CEOs who are out there on Twitter or out there engaging with people on social media, and it's it's fascinating to watch. I mean, I think many of them were afraid at first, but many of them now realize it's another way to gather data and information and feedback.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was intrigued by your recommendations about going to the periphery and talking with the non. So what do you mean by those? And how might they relate, would you say, maybe to a project manager or a project sponsor?
You know, it's so interesting, the idea of going to the periphery. And I got this idea from Andy Grove. And I was reading about, this great quote where he talked about, he said, when the spring comes, snow melts first at the periphery, because that's where it's most exposed.
Mm.
And then he really talks about the fact that, you know, many times senior executives are sitting at the corporate headquarters and they're spending a lot of time with the key leaders of sort of the core business units of the corporation. And they may not spend time at that remote geographic location or with the small little business unit that's just trying to get off the ground, or those sort of pieces of the business that may be more peripheral. And yet those pieces may actually be in touch with key trends, or maybe have a different perspective than many of the old line or mainstream businesses. So going to the periphery is really about that. Talking with the nons is, well, listen, we all took marketing at some point in our lives. We were told to listen to the customer.
Right.
Of course, there's one fundamental problem with that, right? Let's take Blockbuster, for example. Blockbuster did a great job of listening to its customer. But in the late 90s, its customer was watching VHS. They were interested in new releases. They were impulse renters of video. They were families with children. It turned out there was this other little niche of people who were renting DVDs by mail from this outfit called Netflix. Well, those people were not Blockbuster customers, if you will. They weren't the people Blockbuster was listening to. But they were, of course, at the ground level of a whole new revolution. And so listening to the nons means you got to make sure you're talking to your non-customers, your non-employees, your non-suppliers, the people who, for whatever reason, are rejecting you. You need to make sure you find out what's up with them and make that a regular practice.
I can think there could be ties for project managers to a lot of times the information is filtered to them through some relationship manager or some business analyst, but there are times where we got to get out and talk to the person sitting in front of the computer. I remember one time in an IT project, this is very early in my career, Michael, where this is when Windows was first coming out, and I sit in front of a user. I'm like, check it out. You can have multiple windows up. They said, you can use a mouse. And they turned to me and said, but Andy, it's slowing me down. I used to hit Control Q, all these keystrokes. I am so much slower. And I went from goosebumps to, oh, man, we just blew it for them.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
And so maybe who are those people who are not our fans, you know, the people who don't necessarily love the products of what we do, or they decide to unsubscribe or the whatever it is, and just find out, what is it? And that can give us the heads up so we don't turn out to be the Blockbusters of the world. You know, I appreciate how you wrap up the chapter on this with a story about Winston Churchill, how he modeled these principles. And though it kind of made him appear almost prescient, it did get him in trouble at times with his officers, right?
It did. You know, so Churchill was a really interesting, I love history. And Churchill, for me, is one of those giants of history. And one of the reasons I gravitated toward him when I was writing this chapter is the darn guy was so prescient, right? I mean, he nailed it in World War I when he foretold the threat of rising German militarism. He sounded alarms about Hitler in the 30s, long before everyone else was worried. And, of course, he predicted, you know, the threat of Soviet expansion with the Iron Curtain speech. And how did he do it? Well, what I found was that he engaged many of these principles by going out to the front lines, listening with his own ears, seeing with his own eyes, talking to the sailors. And he did this remarkably well when he was first Lord of the Admiralty, and when he became that in 1911. He really went out there and was on the front lines, and that helped him both understand the German threat and revolutionize the British Navy. But as part of that, you know, grossing himself on the front lines, he would go out and talk to sailors, and he'd even go so far as to ask them what was wrong with their superiors and why, maybe the captain of their ship could do things differently. And of course, that meant that his folks, his direct reports didn't necessarily like that. And of course, I tell that story because it's important that if you are going to go out and circumvent the gatekeepers and go out to the front lines of the organization, you do have to remember that you don't in any way want to be seen as undermining the people who work for you. You've got to be open with them, tell them what you're doing, why you're doing it, and you have to make sure that you preserve that relationship and you don't in any way sort of undermine their authority, because then, you know, you've created more problems than you've solved if you've done that. So it's a, you know, Churchill could perhaps get away with it, but I think the typical business executive can't do what he did, which was go out there and ask people to flat out, you know, identify the weaknesses of their bosses.
Yeah, that's for sure. But you know what? It's just another example, the practical type of lessons that people can get by reading this book. Very many of them. The book is called Know What You Don't Know. And if you haven't picked up a copy yet, I strongly recommend you do so. Also, make sure to check out Michael's always insightful blog at michael-roberto.blogspot.com. And check the show notes of this cast for links. You know, Michael, I've really enjoyed the opportunity to speak with you again. Thank you for joining us on the People and Projects podcast.
Thanks, Andy.
Well, make sure to check out the links in the show notes to get your copy of Know What You Don't Know and for Michael's blog. Have you seen filters and gatekeepers impact projects? Please stop by our podcast Facebook page and share your insights. Also, if your team or company is planning an offsite for this fall, give me a call about our keynotes and workshops. I'd love to have the opportunity to work directly with you. Well, join us next time when you'll hear from leadership expert Jim Kouzes, who along with Barry Posner has sold over 2 million books on the topic of leadership. We'll talk about their newly released edition of Credibility, How Leaders Gain It and Lose It, Why People Demand It. Well, thank you for joining me for this episode of the People and Projects podcast. Have a great week.
With a name like Andy Kaufman, I get grief sometimes about a dead comedian.
Taxi?
Yeah, exactly. But, yep. That guy.
I love Taxi. That's one of my favorite all-time shows, I got to say.
So one last thing I have to tell you before we start is my 16-year-old's taking a microeconomics class, and he was saying, oh, yeah, I've been learning about this, about Adam Smith. And I went onto your blog today and watched that stand-up economist.
Oh.
That guy is hilarious.
He's so funny. Oh my God.
That was absolutely hilarious. Yeah. So I'm gonna let my son go another 2 weeks in his class, and I'm gonna whip that out on him, and he is just gonna die at all the subtle little things.
Yeah, you have to know a little bit of economics to get the jokes, but once you do, it's just really
fun. Yeah. So I'm not an economist, but it had me laughing out loud, so that was good. Hey, you mind if I interrupt that a second? I printed off the questions for the our first interview.
Oh, okay.
So I'm thinking it might be a more interesting interview if I actually have the right questions. So. I just want to encourage you that you're a clear voice, and like I said before, it's that combination between the theory and the practice that we need more of. So go do it.
Thanks, Andy.
Have a great weekend.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.